Selling Studios, powered by RumbleOn.com. It's time for Talking with TD.
Touchdown, Tennessee!
The latest on the Two-Tone Blue with ESPN's Teron Davenport.
Put up a shut-up term.
This is Nashville's best sports talk.
ESPN.
102.5 The Game.
Here we go. That's right, it's showtime. You are now talking with TD. Appreciate each of you for tuning in. Great show on tap. We're going to keep things going. Run TMC. It's a weekly thing. That's what we're going to do. So Chris Sanders is going to join us. We're going to talk a little running backs. Always a pleasure to do that. And we have a lot to get into. Roster projections, injuries, Vic Beasley, the mindset of this team. There's so much to talk about, Elijah, but I think first things first, we need to look at these injuries. Mm-hmm. Because Tuesday, as you mentioned when we walked into the studio, Tuesday was a tough day at St. Thomas Sports Park.
I'm sure they've had better days over there in terms of the health of players and practices. Not oftentimes do you see the cart come out twice. In the same day. And it don't even matter what players it is. You hear the news that there has been carts used twice in the same day. It is never a positive thing.
So the first one that we're going to get into is Derek Roberson. And it's really unfortunate because this is a player that Mike Vrabel complimented just earlier that day. Shane Bowen talked positively about him the day before. And he was on his own virtual press conference with us the day before as well. He worked his way up the depth chart. You know, you saw him getting more and more significant reps. He's a guy that the coaches, like I said, they're pretty high on. It happened during 7-on-7. And I remember standing there and I was talking to someone about literally the depth on the outside linebacker group. And sure enough, you know, I looked down and then I looked up, and on the opposite field, you saw Derek Roberson being helped up. And first he was down, then the cart went over, then he was helped up and put onto the cart. So I kind of watched him get carted off. And then when he went to go inside, you know, the team pastor and then one of the other Titan staff members, they each stood on opposite sides and they helped him in. And he was favoring his leg heavily. And one of the things that I looked at is as he was on the cart, like while they were carting him off, you know, his foot was kind of shaking back and forth. And it's like one of those things you do, like, you know, if you're really in pain, like you got to shake, you know, and that's what he did. Really hope that it's not that serious. What I'm getting is that they may have avoided a catastrophic situation with him, but we're going to know within the next couple of days. So that's positive news. Like, that's good news that they're not, you know, nothing is coming out right away that it's severe, but that's something that you have to be concerned about, especially, I mean, outside linebackers. I mean, these are guys, mm-hmm. you know, he has to get, and that's the other thing. I've seen Derek Roberson getting down in that 4-point stance and going at the quarterback that way too. And like any position, man, you really need your lower part of your body to be effective. So that's going to be something to monitor. You know, roster projections are coming up, and we'll get into that a little bit later. But, you know, when you have that, what happens, right? What mm-hmm. happens if Derek Roberson is not able to go? You know, now you have other guys that I'll mention later that I think, you know, might be thrust into a situation where they're going to be expected to contribute. The next one that we need to talk about is Nate Davis. And I swear to you, I don't know what happened with him either. I just saw him suddenly walk off the field. This was during a team period towards the end of practice. He was walking off the field, and basically the way they set up, it depends on what field they're on, but when they're on the field to the far left, the offense is on the left, the defense is on the right. So it's field number one. And typically when a play's over, obviously the offensive guys, they walk to the left, right, where the offense is. The play was over, and Nate Davis walked to the right. And you saw him kind of limping, and then he went down once he got to the sideline, and then the trainers went over, and they, you know, they were looking at him, and then the cart, vroom, vroom, they fired that up, and it went over and got him. And then they were helping him in, and it was his left leg. And as they helped him in, you know, the leg was very, like, it was stiff, right? Like, his foot was kind of sticking up, you know, like there was tightness. So you could tell there was tightness somewhere because his foot, like, every time he stepped, it wasn't flat on the ground. I'm no doctor, you know what I mean? But I remember when that happened, I turned to Corey Curtis and I said, that's a cramp. It may just be a cramp, you know, and sure enough, Eric Bachrach and Terry McCormick, you know, hat tip to them. They reported that that's what it was, a cramp. So that's a good situation. And another reason that made me think of that is because Paul Kaharsky had a very good post on Nate Davis. And one of the things that he talked about was how this dude lost 13, I don't know, it was some astronomical amount. I have to go back and read it again to give you the details, but it was a ridiculous amount of sweat he lost in a practice. Dehydration, cramping, boom, boom. 1 + 1 = 2. So that's what made me think that. And, wow, if that was a bad situation, that offensive line, woo. And we'll get into that in the next segment. But that leads me to what I think we need to talk about also to start this show, and that's Vic Beasley. And one of the Titans fans on Twitter, I don't remember the handle, but I salute you because, you know, you wanted to know about the progress, right? I mean, that's what we're hearing, progress, be associated with Vic Beasley. The guy's on NFI, right? And, you know, we're hearing, okay, well, we're just, he's doing what he can. I think it's time for Coach Vrabel, Coach Ball, like, these guys have to, what's the deal? Because that's what fans want to know. It's our job to get that out, and we're trying. My attempt came on Tuesday. I asked the question, and, you know, just frankly, you know, what is the progress, and what does it mean when you're saying that he's doing what he can, what you're asking him to do? Here's what Coach Vrabel said when I asked him that.
You know, again, that he's doing maybe more than he did yesterday or last week. His improvement, I would say, understanding our system, our defensive system, better than what it was when he got here, through the course of the offseason and the Zoom meetings. You know, that's hard to learn a new system in that environment. And I'm continuing to work hard and try to improve and get his return back as soon as possible.
So basically, that's kind of like when you go to the store and you get a salad, you know, but this time, instead of lettuce, we got words. That's really what it...
He gave me the Derek Jeter answer, where he said a couple sentences, but in those couple sentences, there was really nothing actually said.
Yeah, so the fact remains, this team is just a little over a week away from the season debut on the road against a team that ended the season in really good shape offensively. And they just, oh, by the way, happened to add Jerry Jeudy and KJ Hamler. Oh, and Melvin Gordon to the team. So you need as much as you could get firepower wise defensively. 1 year, $9.5 million, 10 days late, $500,000 fine, not one practice during training camp. It's almost becoming a Where's Waldo situation.
It's been the story of the entire training camp.
Vic Beasley has replaced Bigfoot. He has replaced the Loch Ness Monster as the person or the being that has a questionable existence. Now, I'm exaggerating there. I mean, I've seen him in the facility. I saw him on a treadmill. I saw him riding a bike.
You can prove his existence. He actually does exist and is
there is
the vicinity.
There is a visual imprint of Vic Beasley in my mind, who, by the way, if you look at the vehicle he drives, it's very interesting. It's like a cross between a pickup truck and a tow truck.
I'm having a hard time imagining that.
Whatever works, you know. But end of the day, there's a lot to be desired from the situation. I think the guy has plenty of ability, right? And, you know, I'm not trying to ride the Titans about this, but, I mean, the truth is the truth. What's going on, you know? And he was brought in to improve the pass rush. Once he's healthy, I think he's capable of doing that. It's just the fans are entitled to know what's going on. And I think that's something that we will find out soon, right? Because this roster is going to be cut down. And then in addition to that, you're going to have to know what's going on as far as the 53-man. You have the injury reports as well. So I went a little bit longer than I intended, but I think this was something that we had to talk about. So it is what it is.
They need to know.
We are going to go to a break, but before we do, here's what I need out of each of you. Subscribe. Well, first search Talking with TD. iTunes, Spotify, Google Podcasts. After you search, subscribe. After you subscribe, rate, review. Greatly appreciate it. We'll be right back.
This is AJ Brown, and you're talking with TD.
Panda. I got broads in Atlanta. All right, back from the break. As always, the appropriate bump. In case you didn't realize, Panda is the name that Isaiah Wilson goes by. And I tell you, I was on another show, and I shared some things about Isaiah Wilson that I think we need to address on this show. And first things first, let me be clear, and it's something I've said. Isaiah Wilson is a developmental prospect at this point. Initially, I thought that there was a possibility that down the stretch he could challenge Dennis Kelly for a spot. I no longer think that. As I said on that show, it is time to table any expectations of Isaiah Wilson contributing this year. Now, is that a bad thing? No. A lot of times, because of this microwave mindset that we have, you think automatically a first-round pick has to impact the year he is selected. That's not always the case. Sometimes you do have a roster like what the Tennessee Titans have right now, where it is relatively deep. It affords you the opportunity to select a guy that you know plays a position that will be of need at some point in the future. Dennis Kelly is a very capable player right now. Guess who's the starter? Dennis Kelly, right now, at right tackle. This is fine, folks. No need to jump off the pedestrian bridge. Everything will be all right. Now, why am I saying this? Well, here's why. When we first got to camp and I watched Isaiah Wilson, it seemed like the big fella was able to move around okay. But as we got further into camp, it was kind of like he hit a wall. He even admitted it. He was asked about his conditioning. He was asked about, he was just asked about, you know, the difference, like what's different and where he is. Here's what he said when he was asked about that.
I would say my conditioning is, I'm trying to get back into shape. Quarantining definitely didn't really help with my conditioning, but I would say I'm just getting better 1% every day. Just trying to get through more of practice every day, finish through more of practice every day, push myself to get better conditioning.
So how many times did he mention conditioning? At least 4 times. This is the issue, folks. And I will say this, watching him every day over the past month or so, you've seen that development to an issue. Now, my thing with Isaiah Wilson is this, with the conditioning. There are times where you'll see him get down in his 3-point, and he's naturally going to be higher than everybody. Like, his back's going to be higher than everybody else's because he's just – You're so big. That being said, it's still higher than you would like it, and it's kind of leaning forward. It's almost like off balance. So what you're seeing happening is you're seeing these shorter guys, you know, like a Wyatt Ray. You're seeing like a Harold Landry. Well, no, Harold Landry hasn't gone against him. I mean, you even saw Laurell Murchison. Laurell Murchison has had some outstanding snaps against Isaiah Wilson. Now, Isaiah Wilson has some good ones against Murchison, too. And shout out Murchison for the Jordan cleats. I posted a picture of that, man. Big man with swag.
A man with good taste.
Stock up. Stock, oh, yeah. Stock is up. Big man with swag. I appreciate that. But they're having really good reps because they're shorter, and it's just naturally easier to win that leverage battle. And that's something that Wilson is going to struggle with regardless, even playing with good technique. He's going to struggle to win the leverage battle against those shorter pass rushers. And when you're fatigued, technique tends to go out the window. And this is something that Corey Davis and A.J. Brown mentioned. So we're talking about even guys who are very well conditioned. You know, they mentioned this during the season. They said that during the season, you know, one of the things they want to avoid is having fatigue in the fourth quarter. Because as Corey Davis said, everybody deals with fatigue. It's going to happen. That's when technique breaks down. Now, at this point right now, unlike, you know, some of the Saturdays that he played at Georgia, you're not going to get away with bad technique at this level. And I think that's what's kind of rearing its ugly head right now. I'm not saying he's having a miserable camp, because he's not. He's shown flashes. Like, you can clearly see, oh, yeah, I get why he's a first-round draft pick. Because, you know, there are times where he fires off that ball and he washes that five technique all the way down, and the running back could bounce that thing outside and have a lane. I'm not saying it's all bad. But what I am saying is there's a lot of room for improvement. We expected developmental type of
hurdles, I guess, hurdles. Or learning curves.
Yeah, a learning curve. It's natural. But in this case, it's a little bit deeper. And you know what? That's all right. Because it happened before. When he got to Georgia, and you know, we had the coach on. He talked about it. He's not a head coach at Arkansas. He was the O-line coach. We had him right here on Talking with TD, because you know how we do. And one of the things that he shared was Isaiah Wilson had the self-fortitude, the self-actualization. That's the word I'm looking for. To say, hey, let me take a step back. I may not be ready right now, but I will be ready. Let me get ready. That's basically what you're seeing happening here. And you know what? The last time that happened, it wasn't a bad situation. The guy ended up being a first-round draft pick. Mm-hmm. So let's just be cool about this Isaiah Wilson thing. I'm just reporting what I see. And you're seeing him on the ground a lot. And that's just because, again, the technique, and when you're fatigued, right, you tend to lunge. And it's something that he did at times at Georgia. But, again, you get away with it there. But you lunge, and you're going to end up on the ground. Even the coaches, like, this isn't just some random thing I'm throwing out there. I even saw Coach Keith Carter, you know, go over and talk to him a little bit, and it was based around, you know, getting – actually, he said something about the stance. I'm not going to repeat it because we're not really supposed to repeat what we're seeing out there, but, you know, what we're hearing a coach say. But let's just put it this way. He needed to get in a better stance. They weren't happy with that. So it's not just some random thing I'm throwing out there. And then in addition to that, just being able to move a little bit better and play with a little bit more energy. This is a team that is built to reflect Mike Vrabel's personality. And you look at when number 50 was suiting up for the Patriots and the Chiefs, that's what he was known for, energy. Energy and enthusiasm. I mean, heck, you see it in watching him coach. He's known for energy and enthusiasm. The guy goes to every position and works with every group. So this team is naturally supposed to reflect that, and you're not exactly seeing that from Isaiah Wilson. But, again, it's okay. Give it time. Sabali, that means patience. There's a song, by the way, Damian Marley and Nas. Ooh. It's called Patience. Look it up, man. That's a dope track. It's like 9 years old, but it's a dope song. But, yeah, just keeping on schedule, man. This offensive line, I think it's something we need to talk about because, as we mentioned, the Nate Davis situation. So, typically, the starting offensive line, we know what it is. Luan, Saffo, Jones, Davis, Kelly. But I think we need to look at what's going on behind that because if Davis, you know, if that cramp develops into something worse, then what? Roster cutdowns are coming. Jameel Douglas is essentially the top backup guard. So what happens if Nate goes down? Because Douglas is also their first option, their likely first option at center. So now you're looking at a group of offensive linemen, 9 guys you probably keep. You may have to expand to 10, you know, whether it's Daniel Munyer or the guy I call the little center, Eric Bachrach. You know, he always points him out. Aaron Brewer, I believe he's from, I want to say, I have to look at the roster. It's a relatively lesser known school, but he's like 6'2", 275. So these are guys that they're playing at center also. So that could open up a spot for them. But the other thing is right tackle, right? I mean, Dennis Kelly has missed practice. Jameel Douglas has missed some practices. So now, you know, your depth really comes into play. David Quesenberry, I believe, is on the roster, and he's someone that you could play multiple. He could play left or right tackle. He could play anything but center, basically. And I venture to say that if you put him at center, he could do the job for you enough to hold it down for – a quarter or two.
He can figure it out for short bits of time. He's a veteran. He's been around for a while.
Yeah. Yeah. A guy who actually Mike Vrabel credits with helping teach his son Tyler, who's now an NFL prospect at left tackle at Boston College. Mike Vrabel credits Quesenberry. You can check that out. There's a post I did about that on ESPN.com.
Good plug.
Yeah. Got a plug. But yeah, I mean, that's a guy that will help at depth. But then you have other ones, you know, Avery Genesee is one that I thought would be in the mix, but he was released on Wednesday. So they definitely have some things to figure out. Ty Sambrail, a lot of people looked at that move as like, oh, yeah, okay. Guess who's getting significant snaps right now?
Already.
With Isaiah Wilson mixing in. Ty Sambrail.
Oh, wow.
So that's a testament to a few things, but I mean, this offensive line, let's face the facts, when healthy and they're in sync with that tractor in the backfield with the 22 on it, they're in good shape running the football. And that Luan and Saffo combination running to the left has been very successful. And Nate Davis has some really good blocks. So again, Davis was reported to have just a cramp. So that's a positive thing. But I think the depth behind that, they have to really take a closer look at that. I just am trying to figure out what they're going to do because, as I said, Jameel Douglas has missed, I believe it's 3 practices in a row. Dennis Kelly has missed 2. So there are some things to figure out 53-man roster-wise. We'll get into that in a little bit. But before we go to a break, again, I'm going to invite you to rate, review, subscribe. Talking with TD on iTunes, Google Podcasts, Spotify. We'll be right back. And, oh, by the way, this next segment, listen, I'm going to get my little Yoda on. You know what I mean? Get the cup and put the cup out there. I'm not begging, but I'm just putting the offer out there. If you're interested in sponsoring this next segment, an NFL receiver in Chris Sanders and a Titans beat writer for ESPN, we welcome all offers. Definitely make sure you get with us. My DMs are open at tdavenport_NFL. You can feel free to email me to teron.davenport@ESPN.com. I ain't too proud. We'll be right back.
This is Derrick Henry. You're now talking with TD.
All right, you hear that music, so you know what time it is. Run TMC. Yes, yes, yes. It's always funny because, you know, you have a couple former receivers, one former pro, one former collegiate receiver talking the run game. But, hey, this is what it is. Chris, what's going on, man?
What's up, up, man? You're doing all right. Let me ask you a question. If you play receiver right now, what routes could you run? Could you go deep or just run the slant?
Hey, man, I'm running a slant. I might be able to give you a dig. And, you know, you can send me a motion across the formation. Yeah. And I'll run the speed out.
Yeah, but all I got for you is a hitch in the bubble, and I'm coming out. That's all I got for you. I'm almost 50 years old, man. I'm like 49, man.
Yeah, for real, man. Hey, listen, a running play would be good because I could just tap and then release outside and run you up the field. That's me blocking. You know what I mean?
First of all, we don't block, man. What are you talking about?
Hey, that's what I'm saying. Run you up the field. That's me blocking. Take you out the play.
There it is, man. Well, it's good to hear from you, bro.
Yeah, no doubt, man. I appreciate this segment that we're doing. I want to take this time just to get into the running back position itself and the devaluation of it. And what sparked that idea is this whole Alvin Kamara situation.
Ooh.
And this is a guy that does a lot for that Saints team. Yes, they did win without him a couple times when they played, but when he's in there, he really helps. So when you look at just the devaluation of the running back position, what can you make of that?
I mean, it's sad. I mean, you know, when I was here in 1999, we had a guy named Eddie George who would just toe to rock and be physical. But if you look at Kamara, I'm trying to pronounce his name right, but he does so many things. I mean, he's not just a running back. He can split out and play wide receiver. I mean, you can put him in the wildcat. He does so many things. But I just, you know, just the evolvement of the passing game. I mean, if you look at all the teams in the league, the teams that are winning are the teams that pass the ball. I mean, look at Kansas City. They throw over, you know, 35 to 40 times a game. So it's not that you don't have a lot of great running backs. It's just the involvement of the passing game, the spread offense.
When you look at Joe Mixon's deal, what was it, $12 million a year, right? Four years. $48 million, just under Derrick Henry. Mm-hmm. If you're Alvin Kamara and you see that, what's your thought process? You feel like you should get – obviously you're going to say you should get a lot, you should get more, but do you feel like you should get a lot more? Like what would – where does Kamara fall between Joe Mixon – at 12 and Christian McCaffrey at 16.
I think what Kamara has to do is he's got to make sure, he's got to get his money, but he's got to go to a team to where it's a good fit for him. I mean, if you look at Le'Veon Bell, he went to the Jets. In my opinion, that's not a good fit for him. So if he's just looking for the dollars and looking to get paid, which is great. I mean, you got to get your money, but he's got to make sure he gets the money. But also, it's a good fit for a team. It's a good fit for a team. If it's me, I'm going to definitely stay with the Saints. And the reason why I stay with the Saints is because that offense fits him. I mean, they're going to throw the ball, they're going to run the ball a little bit, but they're going to make sure that the ball gets in his hands. So if he goes to a team to where it's just run-oriented like the Tennessee Titans, I'm not saying he's coming to the Tennessee Titans, and he's toting it like 30 or 40 times. That's not his game. He's got to get a good fit.
Right, and I want to get into that a little bit because you mentioned Le'Veon Bell going to the Jets, but I have to say Adam Gase, you know, when I think of him, you know, I think of one of those guys back in kindergarten, I always try to put the square in a circle peg. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. So that, in my opinion, is an anomaly. But why is it so important for Derrick Henry? Like, why are the Titans and Derrick Henry such a magical match?
You know why it's a match? Because look at the identity of your head coach, Mike Vrabel. What school did he go to? The Ohio State University, baby. And what did we do? We ran the ball. We're physical. We're going to punch you in the mouth, and we're going to impose our will. The reason why this works for Derrick Henry in the Tennessee's offense is because the exact same thing. They're going to come downhill, they're going to punch you in the mouth, and they're going to impose your will. Look at what they did to the Patriots in the playoffs. Look at what they did against the Ravens. Look at what they did against the Texans. They imposed their will on their opponent, and that's why this offense fits Derrick Henry, because Arthur Smith does a great job by putting Derrick Henry in position to be physical.
The thing that always stands out to me about Derrick Henry, and it comes out, you know, because sometimes, like, I'll have conversations with analytical guys, and no disrespect to them, but they'll say, oh, well, you know, Derrick Henry, this guy leads the league in negative yards per negative gains on the year. Now, when you hear that, right?
Yeah.
And then you weigh it against him averaging 5 yards per carry on 303 carries and being the guy who has the most touchdowns of 65 yards or more.
Yeah.
What do you make of those three variables?
Yeah, but who won the rushing title last year?
Basically.
Who won it?
I think that guy, Derrick Henry.
But see, here's what people got to understand. Yeah, he might have some negative yards. And the reason why he's going to have some negative yards is because there's 75,000 people in the box, and everybody's keying on you. So you're going to have those negative yards. But the good thing about it is the one thing I love about Derrick Henry is now he's a patient runner right now.
Yeah.
I mean, if you look at when he first came into the league, he was jumping to the side and, you know, losing 5 and 6 yards. But now, man, he's just taking what the defense is giving him. Even if, you know, he gets hit, he's going to fall forward and get a yard, as opposed to last year trying to dance around and use 5 or 6 yards. So I just think that we got to put it in perspective, you know, because they're going to put a lot of people in the box and they're going to stop you once or twice. But then all of a sudden here comes a 65-yard touchdown right in your face.
What do you make of the people who say Derrick Henry's success was due to Ryan Tannehill last year? Like, me personally, me personally, I think his success was his success, and, you know, obviously having balanced offense helped.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But what would you like? How do you attack that angle?
Well, let me ask you a question. What sets up the play action? I'm just asking.
Hey, maybe the running game.
Is it 2-2 that's toting the rock that sets up the passing game? You can't listen. You can't be a successful passing team if you don't have any kind of running game. If you look at the identity of the Tennessee Titans, what's their bread and butter? We coming down here, and we're going to hit you in the face, and then those linebackers are going to come up. Now you go over top, or those safeties come, linebackers and those safeties come up, and it's over the top. So if you don't have a running game, this offense is not going to flourish because the identity of the Tennessee Titans offense is runs through 22.
So roster cutdowns, that's coming. And definitely a lot of guys are going, ooh. Like you did, because that Turk is, you know, he's lurking.
Yeah, oh, he's coming. Tag, you're in, you're out of here.
So-and-so, we want to see you in
that's the worst.
In the office, and make sure, and they always hit you with this, and oh yeah, make sure you bring your playbook.
No, that's, but it's even worse. I didn't have experience, but I saw a situation that was crazy, where they say if you make the team meeting, that you made it.
Oh,
so
man.
There's guys that are sitting in the meeting like, oh, yeah, and laughing and joking. All of a sudden you get tapped on the shoulder and you never see them again.
That's cool. So knowing that is the situation this upcoming weekend, Saturday at 3 p.m. to be exact, 3 p.m. Central Time. You look at the running backs, right? We know Derrick Henry's on the squad. Darrington Evans is on the squad, but he's missed 7 consecutive practices.
Right.
So that kind of opened up a whole Pandora's box.
Yeah.
How do they approach that? I mean, when you look at Jeremy McNichols.
Right.
Fortunately, he knew the offense, and they were able to bring him in, and he kind of hit the ground running. But how would you approach that? Is this a situation where you think they should keep 3 running backs and a fullback in Kari Blassen game, or how would you go about this?
I think what they're going to do, and Mike Vrabel and that staff is really smart, I think they're going to look at some of the running backs that's going to get cut that's good, that's going to be on the wire or just got completely cut, and kind of see if they fit the scheme of their offense. Because we got to understand, if Derrick Henry gets hurt, who do you have that has a lot of experience? You don't have too many cats that have experience. So, you know, they got to look on the guys that's being cut and say, okay, you know what? This guy may be a vet, and we can bring him in. So if Derrick Henry goes down, he's got to fill the role. Because if you don't, you got a rookie from Appalachian State, and then you have some other guys that really don't have that much experience of playing in the NFL, you're in trouble. And then now what do you do? That means Tannehill's got to step up.
So that begs the question.
Mm-hmm.
And every time a guy is released, you always get fans that say, hey, you know, the so-and-so fit. So being as though what you just said about experience and needing to have that behind Henry, what about Leonard Fournette? He's due $4 million a little over $4 million from the Jaguars, regardless of whether he's there or not.
Negatory.
Okay.
Yeah, the reasons why I say negatory is because it's not about his ability. It's not that he can't, you know, carry the load if Derrick Henry gets hurt. We always say this term, attitude determines altitude.
Mm.
It's not that he can't play. It's about the attitude. Listen, I'm not coaching a guy that's going to talk back and act like he knows everything. I'm just not doing it because I want a guy that's coachable. Even Derrick Henry that has you know, won the rushing title last year, he's still coachable. He's still trying to get better. I'm not going to bring in a guy that's going to mess up my chemistry. In all due respect, I'm not talking about him personally. I'm just talking about the player. So I want to make myself clear because I don't want to act like I'm putting anybody down. But if I'm a GM, I'm not bringing him in because, you know, Vrabel always talks about that the locker room has to be great before we can win on the field. All it takes is one bad apple to come in there and destroy everything. So for me personally, I wouldn't bring him in. Not because he can't play, because you want to keep the good chemistry in the locker room.
But do you wonder if that chemistry, because, I mean, it seems like anybody that had an ounce of alpha in them was,
yeah, I know.
They were Brett Kearns out of Jacksonville. You know what I mean?
No, man, that down there, it was a train wreck. It's because you have all this talent, but guys don't want to work together as a team. See, when you have a whole bunch of individuals, you're going to win a couple of games, but you're not going to win a championship. I mean, look at all them guys on Kansas City. Look how many dogs they got on Kansas City.
Yeah.
Have you ever seen them cats fighting on the sidelines?
Nope.
Have you ever seen them guys cussing out their head coach? Have you ever seen those guys saying, you know what, I'm taking a playoff? No, because there's a whole bunch of guys, there's a whole bunch of individuals, but they're a team and they work together as a team. That's why they won the championship.
And I think your point holds because that culture that Mike Vrabel has developed, it is a team and they are brothers and they do everything for each other. And to get to your point about fingers being pointed or fighting or anything like that, this team is at ups and downs where the offense was really good, defense was bad, and vice versa, but you never had finger pointing. So that's important. That's a great point.
And you know who started? You know who makes that a point? It's Mike Vrabel. Even when Mike Vrabel messes up, he said, you know, it's on me. He never thinks he needs to do this and do that. But that it starts from leadership, and Mike Vrabel and J-Rob are great leaders in that organization.
So there you have it, folks. We played a little bit of that GM role, you know, evaluating some things.
That is. No, we ain't no running back.
End of the day, I say they keep two running backs, Evans and Henry, but have Kyrie Blassen game. And I think McNichols is going to be that guy that they could just fluctuate up and down. As far as that exception, the two-man exception that you have with the this COVID season.
Yeah, and it's going to come down to numbers also. I mean, if they can keep a fourth running back. So say if Nichols is playing special teams and not playing running back, he's still valuable to the team.
Great point. So there's your Run TMC this week. We will get into more scheme stuff as the season goes on. It's approaching, but that's it. Run. TMC.
You got a pretty
fresh. Until next week, man.
This is Corey Davis, and you're talking with TD.
That's it right there. You could get with this or you could get with that. That's basically what the guys in the Titans locker room are saying right now. You could get with this, get with that. This is where it's at because. As we talked about with Chris Sanders, that Turk is lurking. Saturday, 3 p.m. Central Time. Guess what? 90-53.
The day of reckoning.
The day of reckoning. Now, fortunately, they have an exception where there's two players that you could kind of bump up and down from the practice squad to the selection of guys that you put on the active game day roster. So there are some additional spots. I actually gave my roster projection. You can find it on ESPN.com. Excuse me. There's one for each team. I specifically posted a link to the Titans one via Twitter. So check that out. But you guys are my insiders, right? You guys are family. So, you know, there's no secrets in this family. So I'm going to go ahead and share some of it, even though I urge you to check it out on ESPN.com, Titans page. But Elijah, there's a lot to consider with this roster. Running back, how many receivers? What do you do on offensive line? How many outside linebackers? What do you do at kicker? So, hey, I'm going to be the dartboard. Go ahead and throw the darts.
All right. So a lot of obviously looming questions for this team in training camp right now. And a lot of that has to do with depth. So we'll start on the offensive side of the ball. We'll go offense, defense, and then special teams. So on the offensive side of the ball, you talked about it with Chris Sanders a little bit. about the running back situation right now, and is there a need to even go after Leonard Fournette, and how are they shaping up right now? Are you going to use Kari Blassen game at fullback? I want to start there. We obviously have Derrick Henry and Darrington Evans, and you're not going to go ahead and cut Darrington Evans. You drafted him to be a part of the season.
Yeah, that's not even a comment. Yeah.
Who else do you think can make their way into the backfield that has at least stood out in training camp so far to you?
Right now, the two guys that have the best shot to be the third running back, if they keep a third running back, are Sonoris Perry and Jeremy McNichols. Now, we know McNichols was added to the roster. I think McNichols has a better shot of making it than Perry does. Perry got into a little bit of an injury situation, and he missed three or four practices, and that's when they went and got McNichols. But you're seeing both guys get significant reps. I will say this. McNichols has a little burst with him, and he looks faster than he did last year. Maybe because it's fresh legs compared to everyone. I don't know what it is, but he just looks a little bit faster, and you're seeing, you know, a little more oomph from him this year in camp, which is a great thing. And last year he was a guy that a lot of people, you know, he led the NFL, I think it was, in preseason rushing yards, which, hey,
that's an accomplishment. To him. That's a good accomplishment.
But I think he has an inside track at it. But the other thing that's hurting him is Kari Blassen game, his versatility. We know Kari is on the roster. Mm-hmm. Now, what role he has still remains to be determined because he's an option out of the backfield. You saw, if you watched on WKRN, they had the replay of the Ravens game earlier this week. And you know what? Going back and watching that again, I forgot how much of a factor he was in the running game. Oh, and by the way, he could carry the ball himself. So I think that kind of puts a wrench in things. They can get away with keeping two running backs and Kari Blassen game as a fullback slash third running back, and they could save a roster spot for something else.
And you think that'd probably go for maybe someone like McNichols, who's familiar with the team. So that makes sense.
Well, McNichols could actually be that guy. We opened up talking about the flex, right? The two. I mean, I don't see why he wouldn't pass through the practice squad. They signed him off of the free agent heap. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So I don't see why he wouldn't pass through to the practice squad. So they could put him up, put him down, you know, on game day and flex that. And, you know, that will help having that option.
And another thing, signing Trevor Siemian.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of talk in this market about backup quarterbacks. You drafted Cole McDonald 7th round. Don't really know what the backup situation is. The question all offseason long was, do you like Logan Woodside enough for him to be an adequate insurance policy for if Ryan Tannehill goes down, which is never out of the question because Tannehill has missed significant time in his career due to knee injuries, all types of injuries.
Mm-hmm.
They signed Trevor Siemian. What have you seen out of Trevor Siemian, and do you think that they're going to stick by that, I guess, that solution of having three quarterbacks and keeping a more proven veteran to be the backup?
Do you watch that series on Starz called Power?
I have not.
Okay, there's one character. He's almost everybody's favorite character besides the main guy, Ghost. His name is Tommy, right? It's a white dude, real cool white dude that grew up in the hood, and he's just one of the fellas. Tommy always had this saying when stuff went wrong, and what he would say is, cancel Christmas. And let me tell you something. Ryan Tannehill has missed 24 games from 2016 to 2018, I want to say. 24 total games.
It's literally a year and a half worth of games.
If that resurfaces, cancel Christmas. It's over. Not to be negative, but to be real. Regardless of Logan Woodside or Trevor Siemian, I think both guys could come in and execute the offense. But, I mean, if those guys come in, well, Derrick Henry's going to have to lace up the boots three times.
Woo.
Because he's going to mess around and get 50 carries in the game.
He's going to break some records that way.
Records for carries, that's for sure. But I think roster-wise, I think Siemian makes it just because he at least has snaps in an NFL game to his credit. Mm-hmm. They're basically neck and neck, Siemian and Woodside. You know, so when you have two guys that are neck and neck, you tend to err towards a guy who has experience. So that's why I think Simeon will be the guy they keep. Logan Woodside will be another option for that flex, right? Even though it's only two spots, you have a pretty good group. I think it's 16 guys you have to choose from to flex up and down. I can see Woodside being flowed through waivers onto the practice squad. It'll be disappointing for him, obviously, but it is what it is.
And we dove through the offensive line a little bit earlier in the show, so we won't get too much into that.
Mm-hmm.
But we'll group receivers and tight ends here. Who do you see, I guess, emerging as an extra pass catcher in this group? That's obviously one of the, I guess, the bigger headlines coming into training camp. Is last year you had Khalif Raymond end up having some crucial catches for this team, especially in the postseason. Is there anybody like Raymond that you can see making this team that you probably didn't envision seeing making this team before this all started?
Cody Hollister, to tell you the truth. I tip my cap to him because this guy identified an area for improvement as far as his route running, getting in and out of the breaks. And you saw it in individual period last year. He's gotten better. You see him getting open. So I think he makes the roster, which, as you know, I initially had Christian Wilkerson being a guy on the roster, you know, as one of those back end to kind of replace Tajay Sharp along the boundary. But I think Hollister is actually that guy. Another one that you have to consider just from an overall standpoint, okay, do they keep three or four tight ends? Obviously, Jonnu Smith, Firkser, Pruitt. I think just the versatility lands Pruitt, and he just seems to be a Vrabel guy. So they were together in Houston. So Pruitt had a nice catch in that Ravens game, you know. So he's someone to keep in mind. But I think Jeff Swaim is an interesting player. 6'4", 260 pounds. The guy is a very good option, especially like on those seam routes and things like that. I remember the Cowboys used to use him on that. But is it worth keeping an extra tight end? I mean, he's a big, sturdy body that could help out in special teams too. But that's the one area where I was kind of like, okay, which way are we going to go? You have to read the post to figure out which way I did go, but he's someone to consider.
Okay, yeah. And you think it'd be one of those instances where it's either Swaim or Hollister or an extra
receiver? No, Hollister's on the roster.
So you think he's almost, period. Like, that's a guarantee.
He is on the roster.
Okay.
I will be absolutely shocked if he doesn't make it.
Okay, wow. Yeah, so good training camp from Cody Hollister. We'll go to the defensive side of the ball. We'll start on the line. Some of the big nasties on the other side of the line of scrimmage. Who do you like to, or I guess it's A, stood out, and B, what fringe guys have really at least made a, or put themselves in the competition or in the conversation of not just being on the team, but maybe even squeaking some playing time if some injuries happen?
Besides the obvious, I mean, because Jeffrey Simmons has been outstanding. Jeffrey Simmons.
A given.
He's ready to go. I cannot wait to watch him play. But I'll say Larrell Murchison. And he came out, he's a lot leaner than I thought. Like, I was expecting, like, you know, more of a, just a different type of guy, you know, build-wise, frame-wise. But that guy has a spin move. He has an outside in move. His hands are really good. He seems to have gained favor from Terrell Williams. As I mentioned earlier, he and Isaiah Wilson have had very good battles. He's won most of them. So he's someone. Jack Crawford, the effort there that he gives is something. Oh, and by the way, Jeffrey Simmons, just real quick, because we talk about effort, that Joker got clocked at 18 miles per hour.
Running down the screen. The same Jeffrey Simmons
You're
talking about the Jeffrey Simmons clocked 18 miles an hour.
Coach Vrabel mentioned that, you know, they were going through some of the measurables from the trackers, and they saw that. So that's just something that made me like, wow. But
some wheels for a guy.
I think Matt Dickerson has worked his way in. They're Isaiah Mack, obviously Daquan Jones. I think they're in good shape defensive line-wise. And the thing that I love, because I asked Coach Terrell Williams about it, and he just laughed, and Jeffrey Simmons – kind of showed his teeth and said it, you know, about this group being mentioned as a no-name group, you know. So they got a little chip, a little rallying cry to play for. So
nice.
That's something else to consider with that group.
Yeah, it's a little camaraderie there. And now another thing, this what might not have been a question before Tuesday, but with the Roberson injury, we obviously don't know how serious that is, that's probably going to open up a roster spot if it just so happens. Right? I don't want to speculate too much about what the injury is, but if he just so happens to have to miss significant time, who could maybe squeeze in that spot and maybe make the team if they, even though they probably wouldn't have if the injury never happened?
Well, I tell you, another contributing factor to that is Vic Beasley. If he remains on NFI, that's a Saturday is a pretty significant day.
There's a lot of big, like, what ifs right now.
Right. And not just for the guys who are questionable as far as making the roster, but for a guy like Vic Beasley, who obviously made the roster, but you want to know, okay, to what level he's going to contribute. If he's on NFI and if the Roberson deal is more unfortunate than what I'm hearing, Wyatt Ray is a guy that I think can make this roster. He's another one. And actually, he was the reason why Cole McDonald threw his first interception on that first padded practice. He got up underneath Isaiah Wilson, drove him back to the quarterback. McDonald, you know, on the right-hand side, and McDonald looked to the right, and his throw was rushed a little bit, and Kenneth Durden was able to pick it off. So I think when you look at him, he was also the one that punched the ball out of Darrington Evans' his hands, and he just has consistently been a guy that, you know, has gotten pressure, and that's something to look at. Energy, energy, energy. Again, that's what Mike Vrabel likes. Also, Jamal Davis, I think he has an outside shot, but I think Wyatt Ray, and coincidentally, he was a teammate of Harold Landry, so they could end up being teammates again, you know, after being together at Boston College. He definitely has a shot. Mike Vrabel seems to, you know, like Boston College. I'm not saying that gives a guy inside track or anything like that, but
I think it's
a connection, but more importantly, watching these guys, you know, he's a high effort guy. He matches Vrabel's moniker, so I could see him sneaking onto that roster.
That's actually a name I've heard a lot, because obviously I don't get to go to much of the practices. Darren Donick and Chase, 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. here on 102.5 The Game, doing that, so I don't get to see as much of the practices, but I get to hear a lot from you and some of the guests we have on the show. And Wyatt Ray's been a name that I've heard several times in terms of, like, people that Titans fans might not be familiar with having really, really good training camps. And we move to the secondary. Obviously, I mean, Christian Fulton's, there's a learning curve. All the rookies are going to have this mm-hmm. learning curve. And you have to replace Logan Ryan, and that's going to be the biggest, you know, question mark of the secondary going into it. Who do you like to see making this, not just the roster, but maybe be able to pick up some of the slack that they lost from last season?
Well, I think that's going to be a joint effort. I mean, Fulton, before he got hurt, I would have told you that he will likely be the starter on Monday night when they face the Broncos. But he's missed 7 consecutive practices, so there's a question mark there. But I think it's going to be a rotation. As I said before, Monty Hooker, you see him. You'll see Adoree Jackson. You'll see Butler at times. You may even see Joseph. I think it's going to lean more towards the other guys. And then in blitz situations, and one of the things a lot of people forget with Kenny Vaccaro is when he came out of Texas and the Saints picked him, he was a guy who was considered to be one of the top nickel options in that draft. This is why he went so high in the draft. And he's someone that you could drop down. Now, I'm not saying I would want Kenny Vaccaro, you know, covering Will Fuller or Kenny Stills when they're in the slot.
Yeah.
But I am saying, you know, if you have a bigger receiver and you want to match up there, like if the Broncos brought Cortland Sutton into the slot, you want to match up there, right, to kind of mix it up. But primarily, I would drop Vaccaro down in the box and let him blitz because he's so strong from that perspective. Watch that Ravens game. He had a couple blitzes where he flushed Lamar out of there. And then he had one he lined up and dropped back into coverage, and that's how he got the interception. So that's what I would look at from the nickel perspective. But as far as from the roster altogether, Chris Milton, Kareem Orr, Chris Jackson, these are all guys to consider. I think Kenneth Durden has had a solid camp, but I don't think he's there. Kareem Orr, unfortunately for him, has been out for a bit, and that I think may hurt him. So that could actually, you know, open up a spot for someone else, you know, that like that third running back we mentioned or that fourth tight end. Mm-hmm. I think Chris Milton makes it just on the strength of his special teams. But Chris Jackson, 7th round pick, he's had a pretty solid camp. So that's something to watch. That's going to be interesting. I'm not sure what will happen there because those guys are kind of neck and neck.
I was going to ask you about Jackson too. He's, I guess, going to stand out a little more because he was the more recent draft pick.
Yeah.
Like you said, seventh round. So you say he has had at least a good enough camp to compete for a spot to at least get to the 53-man.
He came on late, which is a good thing because it's all about what have you done for me lately, you know, and he was consistent there. And I saw him actually get some significant snaps in the last 2 days of practice. So he earned himself an opportunity to showcase himself more. So anytime you see a seventh-round pick doing that is a good thing. But one other thing you have to consider is Dane Cruikshank. He's been missing for quite some time. They went out and they signed Doug Middleton, a safety. They attempted to sign Walt Akins, but the physical fell through. So that makes you wonder, okay, what's the deal with Cruikshank? You know,
that's a little alarming. Yeah, because that's a guy the franchise has been invested in for a little bit. I mean, he's had a little bit of a longer leash than a lot of guys that have been drafted on the defensive side.
And it's not just a leash. He's a special team standout. You know, there was actually a campaign for him to make the special teams, make the Pro Bowl as a special teamer. But then going back to that Ravens game, he had a couple breakups. You know, he took on Mark Andrews in coverage a couple times. I think, you know, he's a solid player. So that's something that you have to watch. Hopefully, for his sake, everything is okay. But I think, you know, this 53-man is going to be a tough one to decipher. But I took a shot at it. Go to ESPN.com, man. You check it out. I put it on Twitter as well.
Oh, good. Yeah, I have access to that. And lastly, special teams. The kicking situation is not any better than what we discussed a couple weeks ago. And we still have the question at punt returner. What are those two, I guess, competitions looking like right now from your perspective?
I think Rashard Davis is in good shape.
That's who I would want.
As a punt returner. And we had him on. We talked about it. He broke down the science of it. And he's in good shape there. But, I mean, they have a group. You know, Davis, Humphreys, Khalif Raymond. Dory Jackson was back there as well. Mason Kinsey over the last couple of days. So that's something to, you know, kind of mull over. But as far as the kickers are concerned, I really want to see what happens with Gostkowski because you hate to be in a situation where, you know, you put yourself in position to win a game and your kicker can't come through. There were, for the most part, there was some consistency from Greg Joseph, but his last couple practices have been so-so. Tucker McCann, I don't know, man. Me personally, if I'm looking at it all, if Gostkowski is okay, I agree with the GM, man.
Had some powerful, some strong words about
that. You heard
that
what he
yesterday.
Said about, and I agree with him. If he's out there, go ahead and sign him. Steven Hoschka is a guy that, you know, the Bills released, and he's rumored to be working out. You know, I'll say this. On this very show, I talked about kickers, you know, around the time of the Senior Bowl and leading up to the draft, and everybody's riding the Rodrigo blanket ship
Hot
train.
Rod.
Listen, I said Tyler Bass is a better kicker. The little joker, he's not big, but the ball booms off his foot. I saw that at the Senior Bowl. I mean, it sounded like an actual cannon going off when he hit the ball. He beat Hoschka out in Buffalo. So I was saying draft him, you know, or take a shot. Hey, it's always a crapshoot, but I think they can get in better shape by signing Gostkowski. So that's it, man.
Yeah, there you have it. That's at least every positional battle that we're looking at right now. And, of course, ESPN.com is where you can find Teron's actual 53-man roster projection. We can't spoil everything. We can't just tell everybody, you
I
know,
teased
right
it
now.
For you.
That is an ideal tease. We're trying to get clicks up in here. That is what we're looking forward to. So what do we have to wrap this thing up?
We are going to wrap it up. Just we got to wait. Come back from the break, and you'll see how we do it.
You have mastered the art of the tease. We'll get to that.
Say don't disturb this.
Music right there, definitely grooving music. I wanted that extra loud because that's one of my all-time tracks. The System, Don't Disturb This Groove. We're going to wrap it up. I wanted to play that just because the Titans themselves are in a groove, right? Mike Vrabel has entered the building, and he brought just a level of excitement, optimism to this team. And I think that's something that we need to talk about really quick. One of the things that stood out to me, and I wanted to ask Will Compton about it, because I think he's an ideal person to say this, you know, and give perspective, because he was there when the house was first being built. He got evicted, but then they brought him back home. You know, he has his room. It's in the basement right now because, you know, they haven't really put together that full 53, man. But he's back in the house. He has the shelter. And I think just getting him to give his perspective on how that attitude, how that confidence has changed since he's been there, I thought it was good. So before we get out of here, I want you to hear Will Compton's comments when I asked him about, you know, the difference between 18 and now.
You know, the team seems very focused. And you see the presence with the leadership around the locker room. Like, guys are, you know, chomping at the bit to get rolling this year. We know we got to take it one game at a time. But the focus, the confidence, you know, it's all there. And I'll just keep alluding and defaulting to the word focus just because that's the vibe I get from everybody. And I'm excited to be a part of it and, you know, make this run with them.
So that was Will Compton, you know, just sharing his piece. Notice what he said, focus. I'm focused, man. That's what the team is saying. So along with that, I'm focused, right? Elijah's focused. We're focused on bringing you the best product that we can bring you. I'm not going to say it's the best in the area. I'll let you guys determine that. All I want to do is bring you the best effort and information and analysis that I could bring, and that's our goal, Elijah and I. So on that note, thanks for tuning in. God bless. Good night. We are just over a week away, folks. It's coming soon. We'll talk to you next week.